Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're back on the Tom Hartman Program. It is so good to be with you. I appreciate it so much. I wanted to have a quick conversation with Shannon Liss Reardon, who is counsel suing Elon Musk, and wanted to get a sense of that lawsuit and how's it going. Shannon, you with us?
Yes.
Hi there. How you doing?
Happy to be here. Hey, good. How are you?
I am well. You got a big suit on your hands. You got a chance of winning this thing?
Yeah, you know what? I'm hoping that Elon Musk just sees the writing on the wall and does the right thing. He's got so many issues on his hands right now. I think paying his employees properly should be the easiest of his problems to take care of. But we're waiting to see what he does.
This is a class action lawsuit. How many people in the class?
So we understand that Twitter laid off about half of its workforce. We've sued on behalf of the American U.S. employees who got let go with no notice. And they had been promised that if there were mass layoffs, they would get the same severance package that Twitter had previously offered. But then Elon Musk said no, he was only going to give them a month of pay. So we're suing to hold them to Twitter's prior promises.
And what's the next step in the suit?
So we filed late last week, we filed an emergency motion with a court to make sure that employees don't have to sign away their rights right away without knowing that this case has been filed and that they have claims and that there are counsel who are ready to pursue them. We've seen Elon Musk do this before in a case that we brought against Tesla when it did mass layoffs earlier this year, that right after doing those layoffs, they distributed settlement agreements where they tried to get employees to sign away their rights without being told that they had these legal claims. We're trying to block them from doing that again.
Got it. And what's the and is it a California court or do you have to go to Delaware? Where do you file this case?
We filed it in federal court in San Francisco, but it affects Twitter employees across the U.S. who have been laid off.
Yeah. Where should people be tracking what you're up to? Thank you so much for joining us today, by the way.
Oh, yes. No problem. Well, they can they can reach out to us. The firm is Licton and Liss Reardon. We're online at www.llrlaw.com. They can reach out to us for more information. And we're just encouraging employees, don't sign away your rights without consulting us or someone about what your rights are, because we're worried that he's going to try to dupe people into just quickly signing away their rights. And they might have real legal claims to additional severance pay.
Counsel, thank you so much for spending the time. Appreciate you having a chance to talk.
Okay, thank you.
Be well.
Take care.
What are you thinking we need to do? What do you think the odds are we'll be able to do it in the lame duck session? And what are your thoughts on another Trump election. Your thought could be, it's hype. Do you think he won't actually do it? Another could be, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about something else. That's very appropriate. I'd actually be interested. People say, no. But if that's your take, what I'd like to hear is, what are the best ways not to have him garner all the attention of the country, which is his superpower, right? We play into it. We give that power, myself included. The car crash that we love to talk about or hate to talk about, but we ended up talking about it. Anything you've got on election results that's been missed, right? There's still a chance to debrief here, right? A nice opportunity for us to be here together and debrief on what we learned, what worked that should continue to be done by pro-democracy folks, and what ought to be done differently. Interested in your thoughts. So we don't just just wipe our minds. This is tempting to do, but there's still this moment to debrief. Say, what did we learn? And what do we need to do next? Be interested in your thoughts about that. Let's go to Tom from Bremerton, Washington. Tom, how you doing?
Awesome. Your voice is so similar to Tom Hartman's that I didn't know you were filling in.
I think that's why they picked me. I think, or it's either that or they have a filter where they just like play it. And so no matter what I say, I'm actually I actually have a very, very high voice. I sound like a Dalmatian. I don't even know what a Dalmatian sounds like. Go ahead, Tom.
So it's like auto-tune for radio hosts.
Exactly, exactly. I'm like Cardi B, but like for like democracy.
Exactly. Well said. Last week I was looking at election results in mostly Florida and Texas, but also coming into other states. Because I'm always interested in gerrymandering. It's like my go-to for suppression tactics. And I noticed in Florida there was a bit of almost de-gerrymandering. Like there was the northern district. I don't remember the number off the top of my head, but the one that kind of stretched across the northern part that they cut up and redistributed. And when I was looking at a lot of the districts that flipped red this year, mostly again in Texas and Florida, one of them in Nashville, I noticed suspiciously low, suspicious to me at least, voter turnout, where it was like numbering in the almost half as much as it was 2 years ago, which was a little weird. And I know there were some things put in place by DeSantis to have stricter voter ID requirements. There were the election police put in place, and I'm wondering, are there other factors that could have just simply made people not come to the polls due to the threat of punitive action against them if they even voted, if they even exercised their right to vote?
Tom, if you have that data, if you'd be willing to share it, that'd be helpful. Would love to see the deltas, would love to see the differences between the districts you're talking about and other districts, and also longitudinally, the differences between turnout in those districts and others. New investigative information about voter suppression, about voter turnout in key states. But we have to keep talking about it. When one of the brilliant, I shouldn't use a different word. I want to say the word clever. Strategic. I'm trying to find something that's not as complimentary. Effective.
Ingenious.
Moves.
Diabolical.
Diabolical is pretty good. Diabolical is pretty good. One of the diabolical things that elements of the election denialism is it then creates a context where you don't want to fall into be like an election denier. One of the moves, one of Trump's big moves, right, is to say something that you have to disagree with, so then makes you talk about that thing. And so if he says, election's rigged, then the natural response is, no, it's not rigged. And you keep saying, no, it's not rigged, no, it's not rigged. And you say, no, everything can be trusted. Now, I do believe vote counters do a good job. There aren't tons and tons of people there aren't all these people who can't vote, who vote anyway. I wish people cared so much that was the primary problem we had to solve for. No, the primary problem we have to solve for is making sure everybody has access to the ballot. But it gets us potentially, gets our eye off the ball making sure we actually do have an election system that isn't riddled with voter suppression, which we certainly do. I mean, like in the analysis of why Florida in the year 2000 was the swingiest of states, it was a tie. Okay, it was a tie. And the Supreme Court decided that that tie should go to the candidate of their choice. All right, that happened just 20 years ago. And 20 years later, it's a 10-point state. That's not just because of rich conservatives moving to Florida. And that's not all because of Fox News, right? That's also because of consistent efforts. It's not all because of redistricting to make it, to sort of give less energy to local Florida Republican, Democratic Party, excuse me. It's not all about execution of the Florida Republican Party or the Florida Democratic Party and the differences between just how well they're executing. Some of it's what you're speculating. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I was going to say that, and that's why I kind of dug deeper, and I don't have the numbers on hand, but if you go to the Reuters, the news portal has really good interactive maps of the various vote districts for gubernatorial, senatorial, representative, and presidential races, and you can compare year by year. So if you pull up the maps for 2022 and 2020, you can just look at them side by side. And, that's why I dove deeper into the voter numbers, because when I look at Tennessee, the district that flipped red was 100% gerrymandered. You can look and you can see, okay, there's these huge, almost tumor-like growths on the northern and southern sides of this one district in one of the major metro areas where they just scooped in just enough red votes to flip the district. Didn't really happen in Florida. There wasn't much gerrymandering. I mean, if anything, it's less.
It's already been done
before.
Florida Republicans drew great districts for themselves in 2020 and ever since, right? So that's why you've had it. You had a swing state in Florida that was still a knife's edge for years. That was, you know, 2/3 to 1/3 in the legislative chambers.
Yeah, and of the people, and now it's a quote unquote deep red state, and I say quote unquote because that's just the people who are showing up to the polls or appear to be. You know, the districts that were blue 2 years ago are now quite red. And if you just can, again, anyone can go on the website and compare the numbers side by side and see, oh my gosh, there's in this one district, there were 250 voters. This year, there were 150K. Or something.
Well, Tom, I appreciate you. I want to make sure we bring some other people in, but I really appreciate your call and appreciate the information and being watchful on the voter suppression stuff. I mean, there's, you know, that's tied for most important. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Mark from San Jose. Go ahead, Mark.
Regarding Death Santos, I'm not worried about him because he doesn't have a border, does he?
DeSantis?
Yeah, he doesn't have a border, and he pulled that stunt. So I think when he gets on the national...
Well, I mean,
they're
on the ocean. Lots of people come straight to Florida.
Yeah, but I think that'll get him. But I think we should all focus on getting more voting, you know, because they take away the boxes. They take away all the stuff that lets us vote. Yep.
Great. Well, I appreciate it, Mark. Marty, is it Wixom?
Yes, Wixom, Michigan. Yep. Yeah, I just I also was calling to emphasize the importance of gerrymandering in this election. I think the analysis is going to show that if the Democrats had abused their political dominance in New York and California to gerrymander the way the Republicans have in states like Florida, Texas, Ohio, Wisconsin, the Democrats would have easily maintained their majority
in the House.
There were more than enough capturable seats in those two states if they played the game the way the Republicans do.
That's right. That's right. And it's hard, right? It's hard when for the peacemaker, the issue of unilateral disarmament can be a hard question, right?
Yeah.
For some of us, though, it's a pretty obvious deal. Let's do this. To me, there's two places for the people who are working on, who are morally and correct in working on redistricting reform. There's two places to work on it that make the most strategic sense in my mind. One, doing it nationally. And just keep on going like, no, let us make a deal nationally to do this in a sensible way. And second, in purple states, like Michigan is a shining example, right?
Yeah.
Michigan is a state that has been a knife's edge state, leaning blue a little bit, but it would lean red a little bit. And when it leaned red a little bit, they drew ridiculous districts, and a hero took on the issue. She built up the campaign to build it. We've talked to her before, and they put on a ballot initiative to change that in that purple state. And now that state has a legislature that performs similar to the majority desire in that state, which seems like how it should go. At any yep. purple state where we can do that makes a whole lot of sense. Last word for you.
Yeah, I live in Michigan, and I greatly appreciate that. I voted for the initiative in 2018. We passed a constitutional amendment, and this year was the first year with those fair districts, and the Democrats took both the House and the Senate for the first time since 1982.
There you go.
So even with fair districts, in a truly free and fair election, Democratic ideas and policies win.
Well, great way to close the segment. Thank you so much for your time, Marty, and thanks for calling from Michigan. We'll be right back after this. This is Tom's show. This is your show.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We'll go straight to Dennis. Dennis from Aptos, California. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that the fascists really took a loss. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that so many Americans decided to pick the right candidates, the Democrats, not the Republicans. It's kind of ironic right now that the Democrats have kept control of the Senate, but the Senate is actually the most undemocratic body of representatives in Washington. In fact, I would make an argument to get rid of the Senate because it is so unrepresentative of the people generally. We have these state. I don't think any state should be allowed to exist as a state if they only have one congressperson and two senators. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Idaho, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana should all be one state. And having said that, I would say that California probably could be at least three states, if not four. And if that happened, maybe you could throw the Sierra Foothills, make that a state, and the Republicans, that would be kind of like throwing a bone to the Republicans,
well,
I guess.
Dennis, where I'll agree with you. I want to agree and then quibble. Well, I'll quibble first. My quibble is I'm not prepared to eliminate states of the union. It's not up to me, fortunately or unfortunately. But I'm not prepared to eliminate states of the union. But you do make such an important point about if we're going to be a community that advocates for democracy. And that's never going to be perfect, and we're going to have different definitions of that. And we're not going to be democracy fundamentalists. We're just going to be democracy loyalists. That the U.S. Senate, particularly in its current form, with a pretty well ideologically sorted S-O-R-T-E-D, not S-O-R-D-I-D, ideologically sorted political party set, right? Different from, pre-pick your year, to call it pre-Nixon, when you had legitimately conservative Democrats and legitimately liberal Republicans, not just like kind of moderates, but like legitimately overlap, that that it is an important
thing to be aware of, that the more power the U.S. Senate wields and the less that it is forced to be a majoritarian institution, the greater democracy at risk. That is at risk. That I agree very much. I want to hear from Dave from Federal Way. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Jeff. I just basically want to echo a lot of what the previous callers have said, but I want to put my Dave twist on it. Like, number one, this thing with Donald Trump's big announcement, I did not consider this until I heard a Trump caller call in, and it's very excited about what he called an orange wave. What he's talking about is Dick Morris's book, The Return, or Trump. You know, it's speculated that Trump might actually do a third party candidacy, form his own party. Now, whether or not we agree with, you know, believe it's possible or not, because I'm kind of in between there, it would benefit Russia and China. And they have been particularly mad or angry over the years about these color revolutions that you know, encourage citizens to not pay taxes. As a show, and they blame the deceased Gene Sharp for that, who's a political scientist they said was in the CIA. So I'm wondering about this, man. This is like, wow, Trump is really doing the bidding of Beijing and Moscow again. And then also, I just wanted to say, as far as Roe v. Wade, I heard somebody characterize the revocation of that as saving all these you know, unborn babies' lives, you know, and the reporter didn't push back. Abortion has been on the decline. It has been on the decline for years. What we've done is taken away a right. So what I'm thinking, and Joe Biden said that he doubts they will be able to codify, you know, a woman's right to choose, you know, with the current math. But if Trump starts a third party, it will force a lot of these Republicans to really differentiate themselves from Trump. And a lot of them might be for codifying it. I don't see why not. And
when you say codifying it, and when you say codifying it, you mean putting a ban on abortion in federal statute.
Not putting a ban, putting a right for a woman to choose.
So who's the they? You're saying that then there would be more onus on who would want to be more in support of putting that right in.
Well, because, all right, look, Mitch McConnell, there's this popular thing going around, Marco Rubio started, that this defeat is not Trump's fault. This is Republican.
No. Just answer. Seriously, answer my question. Yeah. Seriously, answer my question. I'm just trying to understand what you're saying. You're saying who? So there are definitely people who want to codify Roe. Right? I think definitely people want to codify Roe. What does that have to do with Trump starting a third party? Who would then be more in favor of that right? You're saying there'd be Republicans who'd want to put that right in, or it would just make it more important for Democrats to do that?
Well, obviously it's important for Democrats, but there are some Republicans we don't actually know where they stand. And that brings me to the Speaker of the House thing. Dan Newhouse in Washington voted to impeach. I don't think Dan Newhouse is particularly against a woman's right to choose, and he got reelected. I don't see why he couldn't be the speaker. And the thing is,
he couldn't be the speaker, you know, if he wouldn't get the votes to be the speaker.
Right, but if you choose someone like, obviously, Liz Cheney has been a trooper, right? But they're the Trumpers, the MAGA Republicans, are going to scream conspiracy theory. All right.
But hold on. I got to make sure I'm holding the thread, and then I can let you go, which is okay, and I appreciate your call. But I really am trying to understand. Are you saying, you're saying there are Republicans that you think are pro-choice, who would be in favor of codifying Roe, putting that in a federal statute, if they're a third party? And I think that's what you're saying. I just want to make sure I understand that's what you're saying.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
Thank you, Dave. All right. I appreciate it. All right, thank you, Dave. So if Donald Trump starts an additional party, and it's been a long time since a third party actually toppled one of the major two political parties, but it has happened before, right? We used to have the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. We used to have the Whigs, right? The Republican Party was a new party emerging around the time of the Civil War because of that issue, because that's what Abraham Lincoln was up to. It shows you how much that party has changed. This could be a time of significant realignment if Donald Trump starts another party, but it's harder than you think. I don't want to say it's harder than you think. It's not very easy. There's a lot of things that have to happen. It would throw things into chaos. Last thing I want to say, though, is not a whole lot of Republicans are pro-choice, because it's really hard to win a Republican primary these days if you are. Dolores, you're on the air from Lake Bay, Washington.
Thank you. Katie Porter, out of California.
Yeah.
She is so good, and I do not want to lose her.
I agree.
Because she knows how to go against those CEOs, and
yep.
If they don't have the answer, she's got it. You know.
So the good news is folks have seen Katie Porter. She's the one who brings out that mini whiteboard and speaks truth to power and has her Truth to Power caucus. And I think has been one of the more inspiring leaders in the U.S. Congress. And she sits in a swing district that I think that got worse with redistricting. The new district is a classic example of how about in Texas and Florida, the legislatures there have redistricted those states so that leaning Republican states are just beat red in their legislative and congressional delegations, right? Whereas in California and New York, you have blue states, pretty firmly blue states, that have had redistricting reform. And so you have districts like Katie Porter's, which used to be a little safer, that now she's fighting for her life. And I haven't looked at how much money was spent, but I'm glad you brought it up. It made me look it up again because I hadn't looked it up in a couple days. I appreciate it, Lord. You're totally right. Thurgood from WCPT Ain't Afraid of Me in Chicago. Go ahead.
Yes, good day. I thoroughly enjoy the program and listen faithfully every day. I thought I would offer my 2 cents.
Please.
First of all, I love Greg Palast. I applaud him as a journalist calling to support him. You could have this Greg Palast on every day for me. He's brilliant. I applaud him. He posed the question. Why can't Greg Palast can't get his message out? Why can't Greg Palast? He says, quote, literally, I'm tired of Greg Palast, and that somehow he's not more effective getting his message out. And I just make the point that goodness, I mean, the fact of the matter is, we know there's more Democrats, more progressives in this country than there are conservatives. But the conservative and business interests own the media by and large.
There you go.
Fox News Corp, Sinclair Broadcasting owns 70% of the radio stations in this country. Okay. And so at one point there was a law that forbid an entity from owning television stations, radio, newspapers in the same market. Well, Newt Gingrich did away from that and opened the door for Fox.
Yep.
Okay. And so, so we must be, intelligent, realize and appreciate the courage of Greg Palast. I applaud him.
Thurgood, thank you so much. Thank you so much, man. And thank you not only for having such a marvelous historic name, but thank you for that brilliant, it's worth more than 2 cents, man. It's worth 3 cents. It's worth a lot more than 2 cents. Let's go to Lynn from Long Island, other side of the country. How you doing, Lynn?
Yeah, hi there. I'm doing great. Doing much better than we were this last few weeks. And I just wanted to say that I think that one of the reasons why we did so well is because of this pink wave.
No
question.
Women
voted all across America.
Yeah.
Republican women voted too. I happen to be Democrat, but I've seen that Republican women are voting as well. And I think we have to hold on to that segment if we're going to be as powerful as we need to be in the next election. I think that there's plenty to do in the Women's Caucus. I think that we can take apart the ERA.
We're going to break, but you're absolutely right.
Tom Hartman Program.
You are listening to the Tom Hartman Program, and Lynn is exactly right. We've got to make sure that we demonstrate the rationale of why women supported Democrats in this last election.
I think we have to be careful when we talk about women, because we're a multi-generational group. Younger women are concerned about child care. They're concerned about Roe v. Wade. Older women are concerned about Medicare, Medicaid. Middle-aged women are concerned about the Equal Rights Amendment, and so are the younger women. So, and all women seem to be concerned about the tuition pieces. So women are probably the least emancipated but most unified group, despite the fact that we're multi-generational, and we really need to work on women's issues in the upcoming elections.
No, I couldn't agree more, and I really appreciate the call. And it is a reminder to my white male self as well. And I appreciate that reminder. And as we try to root out some of the sort of deep-seated misogyny in our country, and that includes deep-seated misogyny in my own soul, right? I'm not merely casting stones. I'm also looking in the mirror. I really appreciate the reminder. A little bit of it's not quite math, but it's informed by math. If you're looking at the constituents of women who've voted significantly for Democrats, at least single younger women in droves, and women of color in particular, choice does seem to open up a bigger avenue. My wife continues to complain about older white women, of which, you know, she is ageless as far as I'm concerned, or as far as she's concerned. But, you know, she is not a young single woman, but she is hoping that white women will perform as well as she wishes, as she wishes they were. What are issues that you think, Lynn, that in addition to the ones you've mentioned, anything you think that the national conversation is missing too much, where you think there's an opportunity, where you think there needs to be a light shone on?
I think we should dissect the Equal Rights Amendment, and maybe Roe v. Wade is too difficult right now to pass, but there are other parts of women's legislation which could be passed. And maybe we should look at the Equal Rights Amendment, because if there are Republican women as well as Democratic women who feel that their rights are not being properly represented in this country, which of course they're not, that may be a very good place to start, you know, and come through the door again when we can and look at the filibuster, you know, hollowing at the filibuster that we probably need to do in order to get the Roe v. Wade passed, which is tricky. Black women also need to vote. So that's also an issue. You know, women need to vote. So yeah. We also have to address the John Lewis Stevens Voting Act in H.R. 1, because if polls are gerrymandered, we still need to have the ability to vote. And that's very important. So now you're talking about women of all different ages, women of all different stages. And that's, you know, that's also a woman's issue. So there's a lot of intertangled connections in women to vote, but certainly, women voters are a very big part of our base.
Yep.
And they may be an ever-increasingly large part now that they're paying attention.
I'll give you a fact. If this can be, you know, math-splaining instead of mansplaining, I'll give you a fact that I just saw, which is women under the between the ages of 18 and 29, forgive me, voted Democrats 72% of the time. That is an enormous margin. That and black voters were the biggest margins there were. Lynn, thank you so much for your wisdom.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Let's go to Nicholas. Nicholas from San Cristobal. How are you doing?
Listen, anybody listening who has not seen Vigilante, for God's sake, go to vigilantemovie.com and watch the darn thing. So I want to say quickly, facetiously, and then tell you why I called. I'm so shocked that it was Brian Kemp, of course, who signed all these Georgia voter suppression traps, basically, techniques, traps, given the fact that his ancestor was the first person to bring slaves to the state of Georgia. How shocking is all of this? However, what I wanted to call you about was you've been talking about, what have we learned from these elections?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we've learned, I think, is staring us straight in the face and is not being talked about nearly enough. And that's Marie Glusenkamp Perez's win in District 3 in Washington.
Yeah, amen.
She's, right? You need to get her on as a guest, or Tom does, somebody to, she'd be an incredible guest to interview, because why I'm calling is, you know, the Democrats and everybody else has said, oh, you know, the working class has been lost to the Democratic Party, you know, blah, 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 they all belong to Trumpers. It's not true. She is a working class young woman raising a child in a district that was given a 98% chance of going to that despicable Joe Kent character, that Trump election denier creep, right?
Yeah.
And she beat him. Now, she only beat him by 1%, but she had been given a 2% chance of winning, and she won. And how'd she do it? Because she talked to her own people, her working class people, many of whom have felt let down by the GOP, in whom they had placed their trust. They now know they've been had. And she called it out soundly, brilliantly, well-spoken, told them the truth, and the DNC needs to listen to that campaign because it speaks loudly, you know, to all that's been going wrong with the Democrats.
No, I want to stick with that for a second.
Not been lost to the Dems. They're waiting. They know.
I want to respond to that and stick with that for a second. So the so I know her. She was, because she's not too far away from where we are right now. And I was supposed to do a house party for her, and I got COVID. And then they asked me to fill in and do another one, and I agreed. But then they found another venue, and she and I had a really nice and long, at least nice for me, long conversation about strategy early on when everybody was saying she didn't have a chance. This is in the primary. Everybody was saying she didn't have a chance, and I thought she had a chance not only because she's a neat person, but I do like her profile and I like her politics. And here's a little more backstory for folks. So this again, this is the. As a candidate that won narrowly, was the one leaning R House seat that has gone to, right, in the Cook Political Report, you got the leaning D, you got the toss-ups, and you got the leaning R. She's the one leaning R seat that went to Democrats. She beat Joe Kent, who is a piece of work, but the but Don Orange, okay, I got a plug for Don Orange. Don Orange is a port commissioner, auto mechanic, salt of the earth kind of guy. He is the kind of voter that Donald Trump thinks he's going to get, but he doesn't get it because the guy loves democracy and cares about the environment. And he helped recruit Maria Guzman Perez. And that demographic of the party is an interesting one. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for all your help, Nicholas. Well, we got a call from one of our intrepid moderators, and I just wanted to amplify it again. Maria Guzman Perez, I do think, is an excellent model in several ways. One, got a salt of the earth human being, auto mechanic, small businesswoman from an interesting background, life story herself, is the one Democrat to win in a leaning R race, according to the Cook Political Report, is, I do think, provides a model in a few different ways, including being willing to run when people didn't think she had a chance. Now, it was made possible, of course, by the fact that they nominated Joe Kent, who was a MAGA, sort of extreme MAGA Republican, but did want to shout out. Also wanted to give a shout out to one of the most recent Democratic pickups, Andrea Salinas. So I didn't do a whole, you know, I held two fundraisers this past election year. One was for Andrea Salinas, who was running for the House and is the first woman of color ever sent to Congress from the state of Oregon. And she's fantastic, had been an environmental lobbyist, had been an environmental activist, And now is and then became an actress on a range of issues, then was elected to the state house, and now is in the United States Congress. So shout out and congratulations to Andrea Salinas. Anybody you want to shout out, feel free to call in. Any race that we haven't covered you think is there are lessons there. A lesson from Andrea Salinas' race, she ran in the Democratic primary against somebody who was funded by a bunch of crypto cash, like one of the most expensive primaries ever. She got outspent by a lot, but won because she went voter to voter. She went organization to organization. She won because she told a powerful personal story, and she won pretty handily in the primary, and then was able to win in a brand new district in a pretty close race. If you got lessons that you want to make sure people pick up, let's go back to the phones. Bob from Rome, New York. Go ahead.
Jeff, thanks. You said earlier that there's one party in favor of democracy, and approximately there's one.
No, I said it's uncomfortable if the press said one party is anything, and I used about six examples, but go on.
But I don't think we have one party that's really in favor of democracy. Okay. I mean, we have it coincidentally. Right now, the Democrats are in favor of democracy because the Republicans are so far off the end, but for 200 years, the Democrats have been, to the extent that there even was a Democratic Party before 1960, right? They were in favor first of retaining power. We have two-party elections, and the Democrats have always gone along with that. They control the debates. If you were in favor of democracy, you'd have anti-corruption laws. They would have come up with anti-gerrymandering, which you and I agree is a bad idea, before the 2015 or so, when they really got their asses kicked in 2010. And even if you look at the New York State gerrymandering issue, I agree that at the federal level, the Democrats need gerrymandering. But that's not what the Democrats did in New York. They gerrymandered at the state level, too, so that the state government would be controlled by the Democrats instead of having the people elect them. I got more examples, but the Democrats
and therefore
are only
and
coincidentally
and therefore Bob and go ahead, and therefore
remember that the Democrats are not our saviors. Okay. You know, if you're going to look at
who
one,
are?
There's one Democrat that I can think of too. There are two Democrats.
No. Let me follow up with the question. Who are? I don't think anybody's our saviors, but who are our saviors?
Two people who've been promoting actual reforms along the lines that I've said, not necessarily for their own favor, are AOC and Elizabeth Warren. Although Elizabeth Warren ran on this, essentially, this platform, she saw it wasn't working, and she jettisoned it for a idea of the day approach.
Yeah. Well, let me respond. And thank you so much. Thank you so much, Bob. Here's what I'd say. No political party is organized to support democracy. Political party is organized to build power. That's its purpose. Even the little party that's like, you know, pick your little party that doesn't win many elections, but, you know, consoles itself with its own virtue. Its purpose is to build power. My hope is that we'd have two political parties that had to be at least a little bit pro-democracy, like on the margins and at really important times, because we make sure all the people are. I do think right now there's a vast difference on the democracy score between the two major parties, but ultimately we have to be the ones that make political parties pro-democracy.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hollis from KBCS in Washington. Go ahead.
Hey, I was just wondering if anybody knew that Governor Kemp was mailing out $350 gift cards. And I'm out here in Washington now, but, you know, I spent the money, but I voted the straight Democratic ticket out here for Patty Murray and the Washington crew.
Yep. Yeah, I did not know about, and I appreciate you bringing it up, about the $350 gift cards. What were the government aid cards, kind of like COVID era stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know about it. I appreciate
buying votes.
No, like Brian Kemp is Brian Kemp doesn't think he's going to win elections based on policy. He doesn't. That's not his move. He's not going to win elections based on the power of his ideas.
People. Yeah. All right. He wants to win friends and influence people.
There you go. Thanks, Hollis. Doug from Martinez, California. Go ahead.
I have a plan B.
Okay.
A coalition. All the Democrats in the House, and they'll have a slight minority, be joined by the anti-MAGA Republicans. And added in, they will have a majority. This coalition will have the majority. And the anti-MAGA Republicans will join in because they and the Democrats are all going to vote to elect as Speaker of the House Liz Cheney.
I think the Liz Cheney idea is an interesting one. I think it's an interesting one. And it reflects something interesting, which is the biggest piece of truth that I think we can talk about on this subject is how weird it will be, how important that weirdness will be to have a House of Representatives that is decided by fewer than three votes, which I think that feels pretty likely, right? And it feels pretty likely that nobody's getting 222. And here's a fact. So just the turnover in Congress, in the last Congress, was 16 members. One died before taking office, and shout out to Aaron Fritchner. Five died in office. One indicted and resigned. Three left to join the presidential administration. One was appointed lieutenant governor of New York, and five resigned for private sector jobs. That's 16 in a single Congress, okay, in 2 years. So that means you divide that by halves of year, you know, that's like four every 6 months. And that means if you have fewer than four, you're not going to have a majority. There's a risk you won't have a majority that lasts more than 6 months. There really is that risk.
Who would you rather have in there? Kevin McCarthy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because that's who's going to be it. I say Liz Cheney.
If you're a Democrat, if Republicans have 219, 220, 221, right? If you're a Democrat, it makes all the sense to try to find any Republican who, and name them Speaker, or any number of Republicans who'd be able to support a compromise Speaker. Absolutely. And by the way, same thing for Republicans. If Democrats have a vote or two higher, it's one of the, but it's tricky, and I'll say why. So when a legislative chamber tends to have, and this Congress is one of them, tends to have things they call procedural votes. And for procedural votes, they have procedural votes, and they tend to have traditions, almost rules.
Interrupt you real quick.
Oh, no, wait. Dad, let me say this.
Yeah.
That when you have those procedural votes, what party membership means is going with the party on a procedural vote. If you don't, and by the way, who you pick as party leader is not a procedural vote. If you pick your party's leader to be the chamber leader, that is a procedural vote. That is the kind of vote that if you don't do it, it is tantamount to exiting your party in the minds of your colleagues. So that means any anti-MAGA Republican you're talking about would actually be, in the minds of many, many Republicans, turning in their Republican Party card. Now, there might be somebody willing to do that, but it might only be in exchange for them being Speaker. Take the last word. We're about to go to break.
Okay, well, if it does flip midterm, do they re-vote for a new Speaker of the House?
No, that already happened. I was just using your comment as a launching pad.
With Liz Cheney, who would put the Constitution, our democracy, rule of law, and put country ahead of party.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
We're back.
And we're back. Welcome. The question has come up about when it's this close, and this is really important. I appreciate the previous caller for bringing it up. When the House of Representatives is this close, what does that mean for chamber leadership? And what does it mean generally for running the country? I do think that there is a meaningful question about what happens if we change control of the body midstream, because we know that it is very likely we'll have congressional vacancies within 6 months. Now, if normally the delta of control, and you also have absences, right? You also have absences from votes. It'll be hard to get votes passed. You don't get to vote in absentia. So it's going to be weird having a House this close, whoever runs it. There will be jostling. There at least will be people who speculate about jostling or anticipate, oh, what if we, let's say Republicans win the House by 2 votes. Well, is there anybody, is there any Republican, Liz Cheney, or you know, some not currently elected Republican, because you don't have to be, as everybody knows. You don't have to be elected to the House to be Speaker of the House, although it'd be a pretty rare thing to have a non-member be Speaker. Or could you find a Republican, a very moderate Republican, or two, who would say, listen, we'll make one of you Speaker if you all vote. If it's a one-vote majority, Republicans have a one-vote majority, or if Democrats have a one-vote majority, somebody is going to whisper, even only at breakfast from a family member, you know, moderate, you know, like corporate-friendly Democrat, or, you know, Donald Trump, non-loving Republican, if you voted with the other party, in exchange for you being Speaker, you get to be in history books. You run this whole show. And in doing that, you could exact all kinds of concessions. You could say, yeah, I'm not going to turn this into the Democratic caucus. We're going to have a power-sharing agreement. We're going to make sure we run this. And I do think a power-sharing agreement would be, there has been a power-sharing agreement in the Senate with the 50-50 Senate, right? They've split committees half and half. It's one of the reasons why the Warnock race still matters so very much. It means in individual states, you have power sharing agreements. Like I think Ohio it is, where they've had a three to one agreement. Is it Ohio? Multiple states have agreements where instead of the party in power in the Senate getting to pick all of the judges, where they agree on some of that at the front end, making it easier to confirm them. Power sharing agreements in a 50-50 Senate, you probably won't have those in a 51-49 Senate. It really matters. One could imagine a power sharing agreement in the House. I think it's not that likely, but one could imagine it. And it will certainly be offered. But my point is, it's going to be hard to do. The Liz Cheney move is hard because any Republican, let's say Democrats, you know, tried to get Liz Cheney. I've heard it all over the place, right? It's an interesting idea. Try to get Liz Cheney to be the Speaker in exchange for a power sharing agreement, in exchange for getting a couple of Republicans, any Republican who voted for alongside the Democrats would have a real hard time winning a Republican Party primary, excuse me, and they know that. Let me go to a call rather than babbling on. Let's go to Tom in North Hollywood. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Jeff. First off, we the people are the government ultimately, and we must never forget that.
Amen.
Second, you were talking about where we go from here. We have to move into an FDR-type direction. We have got to get money out of politics, and we have to get better with our messaging. Just as an example, it drives me crazy, these people that call an issue that really does affect the rural communities, because I'm from the rural part of Wisconsin, and it's abortion.
Yeah.
And it's the term abortion. That's not what this issue is. This issue is either a woman's right to choose or the government's right to choose. And just because a woman has a right to choose doesn't mean she's going to choose abortion. But yep. Everybody in our media, everyone everywhere, calls it the abortion issue. Mm-hmm. It's not. It does not. It's not pro-abortion. So why people don't change their...
Is that two things? Are you thinking? Are you connecting the choice stuff or the abortion stuff to FDR? Or are you making two different points?
No, I'm kind of connecting it. But I know FDR didn't, do a lot with a woman's right to choose. So, yeah. So in that way, no. Okay. In FDR's point, I mean more about infrastructure, and I mean about the WPA system, and I mean more about investing, not spending.
Well, Tom, I appreciate
that's really, really important.
Tom, appreciate the call a bunch. We'll keep going on speed round. Glenn from New York City, go ahead.
Yeah, in light of Trump dividing our country for the past 2 years and even further, he can no longer pretend that MAGA stands for Make America Great Again. What it stands for now, what it's become, is Make Trump Great Again.
Yeah, well, some would argue that was its origin, right? Well, its origin, I mean, Ronald Reagan said it earlier, but, if people are going to be cons and go to motive, don't have to peel too many layers of the onion to understand Trump's motives, I think. Let's go to Shay in Minneapolis. Hello, Shay.
Hi. I'm in Minnesota. We're with a Democratic trifecta.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I think I need to speak on how that happened. It did not have to do so much with issues. It had to do with the millions of Minnesotans who got all and worked their tails off. And first believing that it could happen and knowing that the American people hold the power and are the only thing that keeps Mitch McConnell up at night. And there's still work to do. Postcards, letters to Georgia. There may be elections where they need help curing ballots that were rejected. Let's get busy.
Well, I want to give a shout out to back in the, it used to be called Wellstone Action. I think it's now, Repower. Because he taught me something, and he was Paul Wellstone's campaign manager, and then built the organization afterwards. And he taught me something which hadn't occurred to me, that and I say it obviously now because it's Minnesota relevant. And he said we're putting together a grassroots campaign, and he walked through it. And he said not only are we going to win, and this is he was talking about in the wake of Paul Wellstone's tragic death. Not only are we going to win, but we were empowering and training and educating and motivating and connecting and introducing hundreds and hundreds and thousands of new activists. And that's going to pay dividends. And he said this years ago, of course. He said that's going to pay dividends not only now, that's going to pay dividends for a generation or two. And for the grassroots activists out there who are engaged in training new candidates, training new voters, training new activists, that these are you are fighting for a sunset you might never see, but that sunset will come, or that sunrise will come if you want to flip it upside down. So thank you so much, Shay, for calling in and for shouting out to the activists who've made a big difference in Minnesota. John, go ahead. Bellingham, Washington.
Yeah, I am waiting to see if there are some high-level indictments coming out of the January 6th committee.
It's a good question, isn't it?
The biggest threat to our democracy is the apathy that will be generated if people aren't held to account.
Yeah. Yeah. No, having the January 6th committee, and in fact, that's still at issue, right? Whether it's going to still exist. And you don't want to move hastily. You don't want to move without facts. You don't want to move politically motivated if your definition of politics is power. But you also want to make sure that political fear doesn't keep you from doing the right thing. It's an important point. Dale from Pensacola, go ahead.
Yes, I think Tom stole my thunder a little bit about taking money out of politics. That is the root of all cause in the United States. It taints everything. And the second thing I'd like to bring up about the Catholic Church, what's the grassroots appeal for taking women's rights of contraception? If you could teach women how to prevent pregnancy and you would certainly bring down the need for abortion.
Yeah, I'll say two things. I'll take the bait on both of them. Yeah, if you want to reduce pregnancies, access to an education around IUD is probably the biggest thing that has been done and can be done. And that doesn't mean it should only be one partner in a relationship's responsibility to practice safe sex. But if you want to, do something, that's the something that has had just enormous impact. As for your other point, getting money out of politics, I want to quibble just a moment. Yeah, I want to quibble just a moment, and I want to give an unfortunate prediction. It's going to get more expensive, and it's going to keep getting way more expensive. And in fact, if you are just an economist, we're spending too little on elections. Now, as a small D Democrat, I don't think we're spending too little on elections. We are spending an absurd sum, and we're going to get into it this week. We're going to get into the records that were set, and that's a little teaser for a future show. But another teaser for a future show is why I think the talking about getting money out of politics has needs some updating. All right, how's that for a teaser? It's speed round, so I won't pay off the tease. We'll go to Rob from Mesa, Arizona. Go ahead, Rob.
Thank you. Hey, I think the future, when we come to the 2024 election, we got to start ramping up and saying, hey, look, we can't have all these organizations that handle the money controlling all the laws. And like for housing, we have a housing shortage right now. We have people gouging in housing because, you know, when the rents went up, the only thing controlling that is just people, you know, taking more money. I think we could start by passing a law that basically says if it's designated as a single family home, no corporation, especially foreign corporation, can own it. We should have them dump those lands back onto the market and have individual citizens able to buy them.
Rob, appreciate your call. We're heading to break. We'll be back in just a moment with our big, big finish. We'll continue the speed round. Thank you all so much. Paulette from Kingston, go ahead.
I would like to follow up on some personal examples of how the media will tell the story they want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back, I was a state representative delegate for Kucinich when he was running against John Kerry.
Yep.
And they wanted every single one of us delegates to say that we hated Kerry and we wouldn't support him. And 2-1, not one of us said that.
Wow.
All we wanted to say was, hey, these are some of the issues we care about. And they printed the story they wanted anyway, even though none of us agreed with it.
Yep.
Another example was I was in a demonstration. I'm here in Washington State, and Sean Penn actually came up for it. But they had a picture of him. Didn't look like there were thousands of us there, but they didn't look like anybody was there with him. They took it in such a way that he just looked like he was alone.
Hmm.
And then they said, well, there was hundreds when there was thousands. So they gave a wrong number of how many of us were there. And then there was a huge 2-page article in the newspaper about this. They took 3 people. We did see the Tea Party examples there, but there was a handful. They literally took 3 of those people and quoted them, and then just 2 kind of milquetoast examples from our side. So they went in there with the story they wanted.
And they found their story.
They did. And so basically it's the consolidation of our media is why, and the fact that, and Tom Hartman keeps on bringing this up, that they want to focus on the horse race itself and not any of the issues.
Yeah, and
we're not getting issues.
Yeah, no, and I really appreciate the call. And what a valuable reminder of why I appreciate you so much, why I appreciate the show so much, why I appreciate Tom so much, why I appreciate this community so much, is that there is a built-in tendency of particularly large-scale for-profit media to be fight promoters. Former press secretary for Bill Clinton, George Stephanopoulos, wrote in his book afterwards, after he had kind of trashed on Bill Clinton and stepped away from him, he said, you know, there's his case then, this is 20 years ago, 20-plus years ago, whether there's a liberal or conservative bias in the media, right, that's overstated, but there is a pro-conflict bias in the media. They'll look for fights. What's happened even more in the quarter century since he wrote that, is greater consolidation of the media. It's why y'all are so important. It's why building avenues to discuss democracy that is not merely a product to be sold, that is not merely a fight to be watched or an entertainment narrative to be followed, why it's so critically important. Why we need an activist base of listeners. We need people who are listening because they care about stuff, who recognize that it's not just a spectator sport, not only for spectators, and it's not just a game.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.